Hey everyone, Michael here from GameGravy.com, and this is going to be our special PAX edition. And with me, I have our writer, Chris King.
What'd it do?
So we're here in Boston, Massachusetts, and at the 2015 PAX East convention, and we're going to pretty much talk about what we saw, what our favorite things were, maybe things that we weren't really blown away by, and maybe things that we didn't like, perhaps. But we're going to start it off on an absolutely positive note. So this was Chris's first convention, and I'm kind of a veteran. Well, not really, but at least four times now.
Four? So, just four?
Four. All right. And then I went to E3, so yeah. So, not many. A lot of people have, like, years of experience doing that.
Well, yeah. I met one guy who's been there for 8 years, so...
Well, every year is a new adventure. So, so what did you think of the event? Since it's your awakening into the
my
PAX,
awakening.
Right?
I found it very, very extremely busy.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of things to do. It's just
you're like a candy store.
Yeah, you didn't know what you wanted to do first. You walk in, you see the showroom floor, and you're like, oh my God, there's like everything here.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I could possibly imagine, everything I could possibly like want to get my hands on, I want to get it on right now. And bad thing with that is the fact that everyone wants to get their hands on it as well. So there's lines. Not only just lines, but just like endless amounts of lines and waiting. And you feel like you're just slowly, gradually along, moving along the show floor and not really like getting to where you need to be fast enough because there's so many people there. There's at least like over 4,000 people all on the showroom floor.
I mean, the cool thing was, since we have press passes, we were able to get in an hour earlier than the public on Friday.
Yeah.
Which we got a lot done that day.
Yeah, we did.
However, the next 2 days, they didn't allow press to go in early. In fact, they held us back an hour.
Yeah.
So that the public could get in first. So I don't think that was a fair trade.
No. No, it wasn't at all. It's like people who... media passes like us, who have media passes, they want to get their interviews, want to get to everything we possibly can. So probably the big developers first. And just be like, okay, yeah, let's try out your game. Let's see what you got and whatnot.
We interview them and we talk about the game and ask them questions.
And then possibly write it about it on the news and publish it out so you guys can read it from us. And so that we can get our fan base up and whatnot. But that wasn't the case. We only got that 1 hour.
Yeah, on the one day. I mean, we got a lot done. We still got to connect with a lot of people.
Right.
But we'll talk about all that later. Let's get into some of our favorite games that we played and experienced at PAX. I'm gonna jump in first because I have a little bit longer list. So we started PAX off with a meet and greet breakfast with the Behemoth, which was really nice.
Yeah, it was great.
Nobody else did anything like that while we were there, and they were really cool. They had food and coffee, and then they had a private booth area for us to try out their new game, Game 4.
Right.
Which was a brand new build, and it was really fun. And you know what? I really liked it. Will Stamper does the narration like he does on BattleBlock Theater and all their other titles, and It's kind of like a strategy based game, but positioning is key in that game, and it's full of surprises and just hilarious banter.
It really is. It really was an actual great start of a game to start off for my first convention there, because it wasn't exactly you didn't have a controller in your hand. It was
they built custom arcade cabinets.
Yeah, they built custom arcade cabinets, and you had to pull down to actually execute your move and move around with the cursor, and then you hit this big green button. You're like, oh, this is pretty awesome and cool. And it's like actually my first game I played there, which I thought was actually pretty awesome. I was like thinking, is this how it's going to be everywhere?
But no, they set the bar pretty high for us. I'll be honest with you, because they were very gracious in answering any questions that we had about the title.
Right.
They sent us a big boatload of press assets, and I actually did write a write up on it, and we'll link all that in the podcast notes. So one of the other games that I was really impressed with that was hilarious, it's by publisher Tiny Build, and tinybuild.com is their website, and it's called Party Hard. And it's a game, I played it on the PC, it's a game where it's very simple, but it's deceivingly, it's a little bit more strategic. You have three moves: use an item, dance, and kill. The point is, you go to this party, you have to blend in and kill people without other people noticing that you killed them, and then go blend in and dance again and more, do more dancing. So it kind of reminds me of what is that one game with the masks where you're killing people?
Hitman?
The 8-bit game. it was really cool. I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's got this 8-bit vibe to it, and you're just killing people left and right. So,
well, for what you showed me with the trailer, it actually looked like a Hitman / like Assassin's Creed game, kind of like how.
But it's all done in an artistic 8-bit style.
Exactly, and it feels like it was a. Like you could do the same thing in the game that was canceled. Like I forgot who it was by. It might have been by Square Enix. It was like Las Vegas or something like that, where you go to Las Vegas and you. It seemed like a Grand Theft Auto title. It was took place in Las Vegas. You can go on a strip club floor, not strip club floor, but club floors and whatnot.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Either way, it seems like they just took that and put it in 8-bit form, and it actually looks a lot. Looks pretty cool.
I'm thinking Hotline Miami. It reminds me of Hotline Miami.
Okay.
So, anywho. But yeah, so that was impressive. It's deceivingly easy, but it's very hard, and it's fun. It's hilarious, too. Sneak up on people, kill them, and then go dance.
Well, that's what games are all about.
I know, right? Another game that I was actually quite impressed with that, I'm new to MOBAs, the Arena Battlegrounds, and I've never played Smite before on the PC. I played League of Legends. People are assholes on League of Legends, and it kind of drove me away from it for a bit. But I did have fun playing Smite, and I played it on the Xbox One because that's what they're going to be porting it over. I'm going to do a write-up on that. It's not published yet, but I will and link it in the podcast as well. And it was fun. You're playing with a group of people. We played with like 4 or 5 people against AI, and the controls were very intuitive, very easy, and the viewpoint that you get, it's not like this top down. You kind of actually, it's like third person behind you, but you can still see the whole battleground really easy.
That's awesome.
And it was just addicting gameplay. If you're new to the whole MOBA scene, they have auto equip, so it will find gear that best suited for your class. And if not, you're an advanced player, you can turn that off, and you can actually select what items you want to upgrade and purchase when you're in the, if you die or you go back to your home base.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was really cool. And the team was, Hi-Rez Studios developed that, and they're really nice, and they answer a lot of questions. And in fact, we want to give away some Smite keys. There's some exclusive skins that they have at PAX, and keep an eye out for that. We're going to have some sort of contest we'll devise, and we'll hand those out to everybody.
Oh, absolutely.
And I feel like I think I have a few extra Smite Alpha keys to give away as well. So if you want to get your hands on it right now on Xbox One, we can make that happen.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Let me turn off my cell phone here. Hold on. Okay. I apologize.
I'm just getting crazy text messages here because people are like, hey, what's going on at PAX?
But yeah, so here we go. The other game that we played was actually both, I think, one of our favorites.
Yeah.
It's called Elite Dangerous by a developer called Frontier. And it's kind of like, how would you describe it? Like, it's a space adventure simulator.
Yes.
Exploratory fighting
everything game. Everything you can imagine being in space in this game. Pretty much can happen in the game.
And we have an interview that we did that we'll tag on to the end of this podcast so you can kind of hear more about it. They were really nice and answered a bunch of questions and kind of described what it's about. But there's so much depth to it. Like, they mapped out the whole solar system and Milky Way, and they did a lot of it by hand through maps, and then the rest of it was through a program that they were able to figure out and generate things. And what it was is, he said the graphics aren't just painted in the background. Everything is distance and location based. So if you see a star in the distance, if you travel towards it, you will eventually get to it and be able to discover planets around it and go to them. And you get points for discovering planets, and when people come visit it later, if they do find it, they're going to see your name. So, you know, yeah. And people can go, you can be good, you can be bad. If you're bad and you're a jerk killing people, there's a bounty system, yeah, where you become wanted and you got to be careful.
And people can place bounties on you. And you, yeah, know, you can, like, go to the bulletin board and be able to see the top bounties and you see the number one bounty on there. And you, next thing you know, he's, like, walking by you. You're like, oh,
I'm dead. But the cool thing about this game is the community-based online thing. It's, you can work with people. There's trade routes where you can do jobs and, like, yeah, like ship freight to different sectors of the galaxy and get credits for it and get schematics and points and upgrade your ship and customize it with liveries. And the coolest part that I think is that it's customizable and it works with all these different types of flying joysticks. Right. And it's Oculus Rift dev kit 2 compatible.
Yeah, that with the Oculus that we tried, it actually really just blew me away when we were trying it. Now, I already put it in my I have a write-up I'm doing for it, and I'll be putting it on the podcast as well, but I might as well say this now. When I was actually playing the game, you had to actually defeat one or another AI opponent. And when you're flying through and whatnot, I was trying to find them the whole entire time. I was looking around in the cockpit. I could see all these different screens light up and say what exactly it's on there. And then next thing you know, he comes flying forward towards me and, like, shoots at me to the point where my glass in the cockpit starts to break. And I was like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen right now? It didn't break, unfortunately. But from what one of the developers that was talking to us about it, saying if the glass were broke, like, big whoosh of air would came in and it was be nothing but silence for a little bit, and like you would hear all that and you hear nothing but dead silence, and then it would be like what was it he's saying, like,
he said the AI in the computer it explains that it creates sound around you because there are no sounds in space, yeah. So to preserve humanity's sanity while, yeah, they're flying in space, the computer learns what the environmental effects have and will create sounds so that you don't go crazy, yeah, and you know what's happening in your own ship.
Exactly.
Which is pretty neat. Which is freaking and intuitive.
Awesome. And then the fact that, like, when I'm sitting there looking at all these different screens around me, while I'm being shot at, there's sparks flying off from the TVs. I'm
dashboards thinking, and yeah, stuff dashboards, like that. Yeah,
everything going crazy. I'm thinking it's going to catch on fire, and I'm like, kind of panicking because I feel like I'm actually really in the cockpit.
Yeah, it's you know, to say it's extremely immersive is, yeah, an understatement, because the DevKit 2 of Oculus is full HD. DevKit 1 isn't. It's, mm-hmm, kind of VGA. I mean, it's not as immersive. You see pixels and, right, stuff, but in this, you actually see, you can look up and down, you can see yourself in the cockpit, you can see the coffee and the books and the different things that are laying around you, and you can look behind you. I mean, you can do full 360 all around you within the ship and outside of the ship, yeah, and it's just, it's amazing.
Yeah,
I was hugely impressed. We walked by and we're like, this looks cool, what is this? And then after talking to the guy and interviewing him, we're like, this game is way more in-depth than you actually realize.
Yeah.
And with that, we encourage you to look it up. It's by, you know, a developer called Frontier.
Yeah.
And the name of the game is called Elite Dangerous.
And believe it or not, that actually same developer made Kinectimals back in the day.
And, yeah, I don't discredit the whole game, though, because of that.
Yes,
don't. I don't know why you even brought that up.
It's, well,
the game is badass.
The game is badass. Don't get me wrong, but it's the fact that, like, it went from Kinectimals.
I think that they had a dedicated team on Elite Dangerous that did not work on that game. Well, and because, yeah, this game has been in development for a very long time.
Well, yeah. And the fact that, like, I didn't really hear about this game. You didn't even hear about this game. I haven't heard about this game. And the game's even already out right now.
It is. You can get it from their website, yeah, from the Frontier website. But yeah. Check it out. It's awesome. It makes you want to go out and buy an Oculus Rift, yeah, Dev 2 kit, because it's that cool.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do, like, kitschy things with the Oculus, but this is actually, like, legit. Like, it's, right, a good way to experience a, right, full, you know, demo of it. Let's see. For me, the other game was, these next few are from, they're surprisingly iOS games. Right. One is called Divide by Sheep. And it's a, let's see, it's a math game, which, with sheep, you get three objectives on the screen. You have to rescue these sheep that are on these islands. And each island has a set number of cubes, I guess. And if you have five sheep and there's six cubes, you have an empty space. But if, you know, the first goal on the left is, like, four sheep, you have to dump the sheep off by jumping to different platforms because there's a different number of platforms all around you in the water. And then and then the ones left over, rescue them and jump on the floating raft. But the thing is, it gets complicated because sheep start things you have to kill them, and eventually you'll have wolves on certain platforms, like one or two wolves, and they'll eat two sheep or one sheep, depending on how many wolves there are on that platform. So you have to get really creative and be like, all right, I need to move my sheep around. I need four for the first turn, three for the second turn, and two for the next turn. Right. I'd be very careful how I move them. So it's very strategic and it's fun, and the graphics are cute. Like, they're like barely poppy and done very well. I recommend checking that out. The other one is that's by a company called Tiny Build. They're the same people that made Party Hard that we talked about earlier. The next game that Tiny Build made that I really liked on iOS is called Spoiler Alert. Now, why is it called Spoiler Alert?
Why?
I'll tell you. Okay. So you play off, it's a platformer game, just like, you know, like a Mario game. Mm-hmm. You're a red chili jumping around, and you beat the game within the first 2 seconds. You start on the last level.
Well, what kind of fun
so,
is that?
So, right? You're like, what the hell? It was really funny, and it's cute, because the girl that was showing me this in PR, she's like, okay, I want you to test this game and let me know what you think. And I'm, like, asking questions. She's like, shut up and play it. I'm like, all right, jeez. I'm like, all right. And I was like, what the heck? I beat it. She's like, oh, you beat it. Now the game starts. And I was like, what? She's like, so the whole game is played backwards through a time loop. So what happens is, once you beat the game, you start off on the last level and work your way to the first level to learn the story. And there's coins that are grayed out. That means those are the coins that you got. And you select those coins. You jump through it. And you're playing this levels all backwards. Enemies are already smushed in the ground. You jump on their heads to wake them up again and bring them back to life. And jump on bosses to bring them back to life. And, like, there's one area. You get your super abilities back. So, like, you drop the mask. You pick up a dragon mask, for instance, and it shoots a fireball out. Well, there's guys that are running around on fire that you've killed, so you jump over them and then suck in the fireball. Like, it's really cool. So, I mean, it's a really great idea, different than I've ever seen before, and it's on iOS, for that matter. It's crazy.
Reverse Mario.
Yeah, no, it's a reverse platformer. Like, I really haven't seen anything that quite stood out like that before to me, and that's why I thought it was worthy of mentioning.
Right.
It's called Spoiler Alert by Tiny Build on the iOS. The last game I want to talk about is another iOS game that was played on this huge flat screen television they were projecting, and he had a little dev kit with an original NES controller hooked up to it, which is super cool. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. I need to see this. And the graphics were very rich and colorful and just drawn in a really great way. And that's what brought me to the booth anyways. This is artwork. And surprisingly enough, the guy that developed this is a professional illustrator. He went to school for that.
Oh.
So that's why, you know, and he freelances and does that. I got his card, and I swap cards with him. I'm like, cool, man. And, you know, instead, congratulate him. I'm like, this game is fun. It's simple, but it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much your Mexican jumping bean, right? It's called Bean's Quest 2, Bean Dreams.
Oh my.
Right. So, but no, you're a magical jumping bean, right? And you jump the whole time, and what you do is you control the iPad by going either left or right, and you have to rescue these little dinosaur guys or collect jewels and fruit and stuff like that. And you can't do everything all at once. You want to as a completionist or a platformer like, you know, a pro, but you can't. The game's meant to be played on multiple playthroughs because you get different abilities later on that will be able to help you get things. And it's just a game that you can keep playing over and over again really easy. It's fun. You got to play.
Yeah,
what'd
I got
think?
To play. It was actually a lot of fun. I actually found myself like, oh, maybe I want to go over there. Like, oh, no, but I don't want to complete this in so many different jumps. I'm like, I was torn between it. So I was like, okay, so I'll just go ahead and end it in the level. And then maybe later on I'll try to see if I can go back there. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I was actually really surprised by it. And the fact that you can play it on iOS, which is like, crazy.
And the game's only like $3, so it's super cheap. Yeah. And there's like, I think, like 100 or more levels. It's just a lot of levels, too. Yeah.
And then he was saying it is actually a sequel
A prequel.
A prequel to his from his other game.
Yeah, like the other one is just Bean Quest.
Yeah.
And this is Bean Quest 2, Bean Dreams. Right. So, and the name of the studio that makes this, it's a single person, but it's Kumobius. It's Kumobius Games.
Right.
Yeah, I recommend checking it out because it's pretty awesome. Yeah,
pretty awesome.
I'm gonna go hand it over to you, man. Let me know like what let everybody know what your games that stood out.
Well, mine is pretty short, but it was my first PAX, and I was kind of blown away by kind of like a whole experience kind of a thing. But
so a little overwhelming.
a little overwhelming, just a little bit. But games that stuck out to me most was, of course, Elite Dangerous by Frontier. And then State of Decay, surprisingly,
mm-hmm.
by Undead Labs stood out to me.
Which, they're pretty cool guys, and it's a very different game.
Yeah, it's a very different game. It's, you would think it's like, oh, this is just a random another zombie game, but like, you actually start playing it, and it's like, wow, this game has actually some depth to it. Because not only in fact, like, you play as one character, and that character has that one like sword or shovel or mm-hmm. some melee weapon, and then
they have specific attributes.
Yeah,
each character is different.
Each character is different. Yes, exactly.
For example, the way he phrased it to me, which was really cool, is there could be a guy that's great at like mechanics or something right. like that, but he smokes heavily, so he can't run fast.
Right, exactly.
And there could be a retired like a cop that he was a cop before who's excellent at firearms.
Right.
And he can run fast,
yeah.
you know, but he's not good at fixing things,
exactly.
you know. So it's like, he said, I love how he phrased this. The weapons don't make your character awesome. Your character is awesome based on what you do with them.
Right, exactly.
And how you use them and utilize them strategically with each weapon.
Right. In the demo I played with, I actually got to a community. And actually got into the community and they recruited me and whatnot. And then I was actually be able to control other characters in my mm-hmm. community based upon like how I wanted how their skills are and how I wanted to play with them. And even when if that character you're playing as dies, you still go back to that community and play as pick one of the characters and you can still keep playing the game. And now everyone in the community dies, then of course the game's over.
Yeah, so that's the other thing too. They have something with that they have permadeath.
Yeah.
So if you screw up and you put like 30 to 40 hours in one character to like soup them up and max out all their abilities and like get them to be really badass and you die out of a stupid mistake of you not paying attention, oh well.
Yeah.
You go to the next character.
It's exactly like the show Walking Dead.
Yeah, you know what? That's why I like it because a lot of people don't realize, surprisingly, some people think it's just all about the zombies.
Yeah.
Walking Dead's all about survival.
Yeah.
And the zombies play an integral role of that story, which makes it cool.
Yeah.
And this game is the closest that you can get to being, like, experiencing Walking Dead because resources are limited. You actually have to find other people to work with them in the community. Real people, too, online. And survive.
Actually,
and deal with the zombies.
It's not even online.
I thought it was. I thought you said it was.
No.
Because you said
no.
It was community-based.
It was community-based, but it's not online.
Oh, well.
Single player only.
Okay, he didn't phrase that, but that's cool.
Yeah, single player only, and you go through, and you go through different communities and whatnot. And
well, I'm thinking DayZ or something
that. Yeah, DayZ or H1Z1.
That's DayZ. Yeah.
Okay, probably what you're thinking about. Mm-hmm.
No, but this is still cool though.
It's still an awesome game.
Facet.
Yeah, and one of the cool things I found about it was the fact that like when I was actually driving one of the vehicles and the guy was telling me, like, when I was driving, he's like, because I had an SUV, he's like, yeah, you can actually put stuff in your SUV. You have a lot more carry because you have an SUV. I was mm-hmm. like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then I started putting stuff in the SUV. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then I started taking stuff out. I was like, oh, let me put the same amount of stuff, if I can, in this little Mustang-looking charger mm-hmm. over here. Doesn't let me. I was like, oh, this is awesome.
Realistic.
Yeah, it's actually really realistic. And while playing, I got to a horde of zombies and just plowed right through them. And I got to the point where one of the zombies actually stuck on the hood of the car and was still trying to get after me. And I got to the point where he actually ripped one of my doors off, but then he, of course, fell off. And then another zombie jumped on and started tearing at the car again. And he actually went into the car and pulled me out.
Oh, my gosh.
Pulled me out of the car. I was like, oh, my gosh. So, yeah, it has its most moments of being intense and, like, you have to really think about what you're doing if you really want to run over those zombies, if you really want to just sneak by them and just try to survive. So I found that to be really cool. Another game that I found to be pretty interesting and was really, just physics-wise, just blew me away, was Kona by Parable,
I believe. Yes, Parable.
Yeah. It was a, it's a first-person...
mystery exploratory game.
Yeah, mystery exploratory game that takes place in northern Canada when it's like
freezing middle cold, of winter.
Middle of winter, yeah. And just the way that game runs looks absolutely phenomenal.
Well, yeah, you start off not knowing anything whatsoever, and you're like, it's a mystery. You have a camera, a journal, and everybody's gone.
Yeah.
And you have no idea why, and you need to document things, taking your photo, and kind of put all the stories together and explore the world. And he said it's like over 2 to 3 actual miles of woods and city, and you can get lost if you're not paying attention to the markers and things around you. Because he said everything is unique, and go ahead about the graphics, man. Yeah,
the graphics are phenomenal. We got to the point where we even got lost playing because of the fact we were looking up at the trees.
And we mean the developer that was demoing it for us and letting us play with them. He's like, I got to be careful because sometimes I've made this thing so big, like, I get lost.
Even. Yeah. So it got to the point where we looked up at the trees and the wind was blowing. It was like...
It's blowing snow off the branches of pine trees, and the pine needles are all moving.
Yeah, the pine needles are all moving, and like even with getting in the car and driving, it was like you notice how each turn you make, or the physics of actually his arm actually moving, and like each bump in the road, you can actually feel like you're actually in the car. It was actually phenomenal. I was like, actually, I couldn't even express how happy I was just to see that game. And see that come from an indie developer like that. I've never heard of them before.
Yeah.
But, and that's pretty much it for us. For like
things. Do you like Square Enix game?
Oh,
because there was a game that we demoed by Square Enix that I actually really liked too. It didn't blow me away due to a few things I'll note after Chris talks, but he liked it so much he bought it right there on his phone through the PSN app. And, I'm not hating it. I just laughed because I was like, and it's not even on your list. I was like, you bought the damn thing.
Yeah, sorry, I kind of forgot about that. But Life is Strange by Square Enix was actually a pretty interesting game.
It's an episodic game. There's 5 episodes.
Yeah, 5 episodes.
The first one's already out.
Yep.
Yep.
And we played, from what Mike is telling me, we played through the first episode.
Yep.
I didn't want to believe him. Because I bought the game. I haven't played it yet myself.
We'll play it. That's fine.
But yeah, you start off as a senior in high school.
A girl named Alex.
Alex. And you're a photography class, and you start...
Like, a photographer, like, major. That's like what you... Yeah.
Yeah, it's what you want to, like, be when you graduate. And you start off in your class, like, examining everything that's on your table. And you, like, wonder how you, like, what you need or everything is.
Before that begins, you're starting off in this storm on in the beautiful like
Seattle.
You're in Seattle. You're in the Pacific Midwest,
right?
And you're on this island. It's raining, and you're like, "Crap, where am I?" And then you're walking up to a lighthouse. You're like, "Oh, there's a lighthouse." You're making your way to the lighthouse, and then lightning flashes. You see this crazy storm, and all of a sudden, you wake up in the classroom.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You wake up in a classroom. You're like, "What the heck? That felt so real. I thought I was dreaming."
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's how the game starts off in a mystery. And you're like, why is she having such vivid hallucination dreams in the middle of class?
Yeah. When it has nothing to do with what's going on in class.
And we shouldn't talk about the whole thing. We don't want to, like, spoil it, especially if we want to actually review it, you know?
Absolutely.
But I would just say it's a very interesting game that deals with
time.
That deals with time and puzzle solving.
Yeah.
And every choice that you make impacts further episodes. Right. Kind of like a Telltale game, but I think even a little bit more in depth than that.
Right. I'm going to try to see how many different endings I can get while actually playing the game.
Yeah, I mean, because you can affect time in many different ways.
Because, in the demo, I've actually, like, we got to a point where you actually can rewind time.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, rewind it a little bit just to see if I can hear back the same dialogue that was said before. And, like, I was like, oh, I can.
Yeah, it works that way, yeah. The one thing that I didn't particularly like about it, and I think I insulted the girl when I asked her this, Because she kind of looked like a little back. Because I was like, so is this like a alpha or, you know, pre-alpha build? She's like, no, this is out right now. I was like, oh. She's like, why did you ask that? Just out of curiosity. I was like, well, the style of it is, graphical style is super cool, but like, the hair was like very blocky looking, like, you know, but like the faces and like the textures of the clothing, yeah, and the scenery was like really fine and very detailed, but their hair was like polygonish, like, what was that game, like freaking Tekken, like Tekken hair, like they're like such a realistic face with Tekken hair. And I was like, is it a Japanese port? Like, you know what? She's like, no, I mean, no. And I was like, well, she's like, why did you ask that? I was like, because she was talking and her lips weren't moving. In certain areas, her lips were moving, and then sometimes her lips weren't moving.
Right.
And I get it's like a $5 episode game, but like those little things, attention to details, being an artist too, right, like I noticed those type of things. And the voice acting is great.
Yeah, the voice acting is great.
And just the, I don't know if it was the sheer amount of time they had to pump out the episode or whatever, but, you know.
Maybe it gets better during over time, because when Telltale had their share of, like, mishaps.
Sure, yeah, and they might patch it later. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe this will help them. Yeah. I don't know. But maybe my interview with the PR rep will help them, and, you know, hopefully. I don't know.
One can actually hope.
Because she was like, no one said that so far yet. And I was like, well, I'm just being honest, sorry. But I did enjoy it.
Yeah.
I really thought it was unique.
Yeah, it was really unique, and like I said, I'm probably going to be doing a review on it.
Mm-hmm. So is that all the games that you had to talk about?
For as, like, ones that I actually liked?
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. One game that I wanted to mention I totally forgot about was by Gung Ho Games, and it's Puzzle & Dragon Z.
Oh, yes, yes.
We got the chance to play that. Chris played the Super Mario Edition, and I played the classic Puzzle & Dragon Z game, and for the 3DS XL, mm-hmm, and I loved it.
Yeah.
It was great, and I'm not a fan of strict puzzle games. I don't have the patience for it sometimes, but I love RPGs, and this, you know, Gung Ho Games took a game like a puzzle and RPG and meshed it together really, yeah, well. So you have like your RPG system where you're exploring cities and towns, and like you're going through quests through the woods, and, you know, monsters are randomly generating, right, in certain areas, and to attack them in an RPG turn-based setting, right, you have to, you have like jewel puzzles in the bottom, and you match up the colors to create different combinations, mm-hmm, and depending on the colors that you match up, those are the monsters and characters that you have in your party to attack those enemies. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, it's not one jewel at a time. It's, right, you can move them all around at the same time. You just gotta be clever on how you manipulate it. And that's what really was cool to me, yeah, is I thought it was just unique gameplay that I haven't really experienced before, from a puzzle game, especially puzzle RPG game.
Well, they kind of have the same thing, like what I think is, what was it? Like Candy Crush. I think Candy Crush.
Yeah, was, yeah, yeah. It felt like Candy Crush, yeah, meets RPG, yeah, and they've done it really well.
Yeah, they
and
did it really well.
I was a fan. I was going to play only like 2 or 3 minutes of it, and I wound up playing through 2 full levels and 1 dungeon and a boss.
Yeah.
And I did a write-up of that, and I'll link it in the podcast notes. But
it was actually really fun. The Mario side of it was actually pretty cool. You used Mario characters, of course. I had Mario, and my partner was Luigi. And you would pick up different items, and you can actually, I don't know if it would happen in your game or not, but there's like health portions, yeah, in the game. Yeah, you can pick up health, mm-hmm, or combine them all together.
Yeah, and you get puzzle pieces and different, yeah, things that we get. Like, pretty much it's the same game, but skinned with Super Mario, yeah, Brothers. And I thought that was pretty neat. You get both of those games packaged into one when you purchase it, too.
Right.
Which is pretty sweet.
And so, when was that game? It was game coming out soon, isn't it? It was like, I thought it would be in June.
It's coming out in May.
May
2015.
Right. That's right.
So, but yeah, I mean, overall, PAX experience was great. Yeah. I think that we only had two major fails at PAX, in my opinion,
yes,
and I'll bring it up right off the bat. And these are two companies that I love a lot. Anthony loves a lot. He's not here, but he does love it. And they treated press not so nicely. I'm not going to say poorly, but just not nice.
Yeah.
Actually, three companies. I want to say. I forgot. They were like, only doing things on the first day on Friday, and they got super slammed, and they just were like, nope, sorry, press is just the same as everybody else. No, we're not dealing with you guys right now. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Which I think is a bad idea, since we have people, a lot of viewers and followers, right, that listen to the podcast and the site. So,
yeah,
I'm like, whatever. I know we're not IGN by any means,
no,
but like, still, you don't turn away press like that. Like, be, yeah, nice about it. And anyways, Blizzard was one of them with Overwatch. They didn't have a press line. They weren't really answering questions. They're like, get in line and play it. You know, yeah. Just like, or go look at videos online.
Get in line and play it, or if the line's already capped, then come back in 20 minutes.
Which it still is always capped, yeah. Because there's people that just stand there and stare at it and then step in line right away.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, but we're actually writing legitimate articles about right. it. Anyways, the other one was Nintendo and for Splatoon. And Nintendo only had two press people there on Friday from like 9 to 11, and that was it.
Yeah.
And after that, those guys there were just like people they hired, I think, that just come and keep an eye on the booth, and they were not that helpful at all.
No.
In fact, they wouldn't even give me a free bag.
No.
After I played, you know, they played stuff that, like 3DSs and stuff. But
yeah, they were like,
if you didn't play Splatoon in line because you couldn't because it was capped always, they wouldn't give you any of their goodies.
No, they wouldn't give you anything. The line was even actually capped the first hour
yes.
when we got there.
Of the press time.
Of the press time.
So we actually stood there to go. Like, that was, like, the second thing I think we tried to do. And I'm like, what the heck? And then yeah. we went to go see Overwatch at Blizzard, and that was capped. And the third one
yeah.
was Oculus.
Yeah.
And they were just like, whatever, sorry, the line's wrapping around a few times. This is press time, and if you want, try to get in line now. But we're capped right now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so we got capped on three lines.
Yeah.
And they weren't really being helpful at all. We tried to make appointments too, but like they weren't taking appointments either.
They weren't taking appointments. Blizzard took our cards.
Yeah. Oh, and they tried. I came back a couple times. She's like, sweetie, I'm trying. So at least they were a little nice. Nintendo and Oculus didn't even attempt to do that. They didn't even want to talk to us. They actually dismissed us. We're like, you done? All right, good. See ya.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which was, you know, to me, unprofessional and rude. So. But I think that was the only fails in PAX.
As far as fails-wise, yes, those were stuck out the most.
Were there any games there that you saw that were like, wow, this looks really cool, I want to play it, and then you played it and you were like, that's not as cool as I thought it was? I don't want to get negative on the podcast, right. But like, you can at least, I'll give you like one or two.
Okay. For one, for me, it would be, I'd say, maybe Pollen.
That's fair.
Maybe Pollen.
And that's Pollen by who developed it?
I forgot who developed it off the top of my head. I'll look it up. I wrote about it. We can put a link in the podcast about it. But I saw the line. It like wrapped around and it seemed like, oh, it's an hour wait for it. I was like,
because
oh
it was God. An Oculus Rift experience.
Because it was an Oculus Rift experience. And as like my first time ever experiencing Oculus, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be amazing.
That was before Elite Dangerous.
Yeah, that was before Elite Dangerous.
And it's Minefield Games that developed Pollen.
That's right. And I was like, okay, this is going to be cool. This is going to be awesome. Waited in the line for like, I think, an hour and a half.
You did, because I played like four or five games and I still came back. And I was like, geez, man, you only knew with like three people. Because it was like a 20, 30 minute demo, right?
It was not only just the demo, it was the fact that, like, people were just walking around. There was no end to the demo, because people would just be playing it.
And they didn't stop people. And they weren't, like, capping people.
No, they weren't capping people or anything. So it was just like, how long do you really want to wait in line just for, like, picking up things and dropping it and then...
So that was the demo, is you literally walk around and pick things up and drop it.
Yeah.
That's it.
That was literally the demo.
And I think the games that were most successful in PAX were honestly the indie games.
Yes, by far.
They really, I mean, Smite had a huge presence, and that's by Hi-Rez Studios. I mean, they're technically, I consider them indie, but a lot of the indie areas, like, you know, like the indie booths and stuff, they did a really good job. They have such high quality games. They're super nice, especially to press, and they took the time to sit down, tell you about their game, let you play it, answer any questions, you know, and give you any press materials that you needed. Yeah. Like, that's how it should be.
That's exactly how it should be. I mean, even in fact, we got to the point where we would do the articles and post it up on Twitter
I was impressed with that, because we'd have some great conversations with people. We're like, hey, we're going to go write about it. We'll let you know. Is your Twitter on your business card? Cool. Here's my business card.
Yeah.
We'd go write it, tweet about it, and they would instantly retweet it and share it with their followers. Yeah. And I'm like, that's the type of community we're a part of and we love.
Right.
You know, we even got a bunch of interviews lined up for our podcast coming up soon.
Yeah, which just blew me out of the water, because I didn't expect that to happen. Because I was like, since it's my first PAX and whatnot, I was like, okay, well, maybe we'll get one here and there. But then I was like, overwhelming amount of people that was like, oh yeah, here, I'm down to do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, and it was cool. I mean, another game we got to experience that I really liked was Y2K by Ak, and they were great. Jose was really nice, and then we got to meet up with Jules from Renegade Kid, and he was super cool to meet in person, and we're like, oh, because it was funny, we were walking by the booth, I'm like, he recognized me, and I recognized him from the photos online, but we're like, oh, we know each other, but we don't, so it's kind of fun. So it's just a really tight-knit community group with the indie scene, and it's sometimes hard to even call it the indie scene, because they're like all very strong, professional, nice people that are putting out high-quality products.
Yeah. Even with the game, the big developers, I mean, not technically big developers, but Undead Labs took out maybe 15 minutes to talk to me.
Yeah, and they took time to talk to me as well. I mean, they're just really nice people, and they're passionate about their games. Right. I think that's the most important thing.
They're really
all passionate. Of these people are. Yeah. And you can tell they're not just faking it, going through a script. They're actually excited about it.
Right.
Like Julia, the girl that I talked to over at Tiny Build, she was like super excited to show me these games, and like she's like, she asked me first, what type of games do you like to play? And I told her, and she goes, I know exactly the games to show you. And sure enough, she pegged it right away. We're having fun playing all these games and talking about them. So,
one major developer, actually, that kind of, like, opened the gate for us and as far as, like, how press being nice, developers being nice to press and whatnot, was actually EA. With Battlefield Hardline.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I actually really liked Hardline.
Yeah.
And also Microsoft with Halo 5. Yeah. They were really nice, too. I think Hardline was super nice because we were the first the press people that they got of the first day of Friday, the press day. And they literally talked to the PR people, and we talked to the main developers of Battlefield Hardline at who developed it? It was Visceral Games. Yeah, from Visceral Games. And in fact, they were so cool. There's not that many people around. Is that Chris was on the other team, I was on the other team, and then the PR reps and devs played with us to demo the game.
Yeah.
And we were all talking and working in teams, and we were getting tips, and it was such a great experience.
Yeah, that opened the gate for us. Like, I was like, oh my god, this is what it's going to be like. This is going to be awesome.
Yeah. Did you know what? One thing to mention is that EA is coming out with that new system of online streaming games for like monthly or yearly price of like $30 for a year.
Yeah.
And you can play any game in the EA library on like Xbox One or I think it's PlayStation 4
as
well.
It's just Xbox One.
Yeah. It's exciting.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
It was really cool. I mean, we have a couple passes that we're probably going to be giving away as well.
Yeah, well, we have one that we're going to be
giving
away.
Yeah, we're giving one.
So keep an eye out for that. It's one free month of the EA's Unlimited Gaming.
Yeah.
And then after that, you need to subscribe to it if you want to continue to use it. Yeah. Otherwise, it expires.
Which I don't know why you wouldn't, but...
Yeah, yeah, I mean, $30 a year is like half of the price of one game.
Yeah.
And then you can play any game.
Yeah.
Any part of...
In any unlimited
amount of time.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you own the games, all the games, pretty much. Like, it was, like, a hell of a deal.
Yeah. Even the fact that if they're not in the vault, you actually get a discount.
Yeah, on pre-ordering it.
On pre-ordering the game,
yep.
So.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't do it.
Yeah, it just makes sense. But I think that's pretty much sums up our PAX East 2015 experience.
Absolutely, it does.
All right, well, we hope you enjoyed listening, and keep an eye out. Check out the banner at the top of the site. If you click on that, it will filter all of the PAX articles that me and Chris have been working our butt off to be writing every day here. And let us know what you think in the comments below of the podcast and also our articles, and we'll see you guys soon. Thanks for listening. This is Mike and Chris from GameRated.com signing off.
Later.
Bye.